Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth. Served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Okay, so Spike Lee has settled with the elderly couple he targeted for stalking and harassment by tweeting out their address as the home of George Zimmerman. Oops, wrong George. What a jerk. What's this guy about? Why would you do this? What if these folks had been killed by some new Black Panther thug? Now, I understand Roseanne Barr has broadcast the correct address of Zimmerman's family. Why? Why would these people do something like this? What do they think? What do they hope to accomplish with this? What possible motivation would Barr have, or Lee have, for telling everyone where these people live, unless they want to queue up a lynch mob? And these are the people who talk about, heated rhetoric. I guess we have our own version of crazy radical Muslim maniacs who go on a lawless rampage when there is even an allegation of crime against them. Now, who needs an investigation, right? I mean, why wait for an investigation? Why bother with process of law, huh? Obama, Pelosi, and Reid don't. They don't bother with the process of law and their shenanigans and pushing through Obamacare. And why should we, right? Who needs proof? Yeah. This is the same Dane, Barr, who believes Bush planted the bombs that brought down the towers. Actually, I think Al Gore did it. Anyway, it turns out the Florida police did arrest the shooter of Trayvon, took him in for questioning. I read in one place that the police report indicates he was bloodied. That the prosecutors looked over the matter and judged that there was no case that could be made that would justify imprisoning the character, and that the character was known to be of such character he posed no flight risk, so they let him go, but have continued the investigation. All right, now, well, we're going to see as things unfold. I suppose there should be some medical reports of the alleged broken nose. A lot of talk is bubbling out there about a surveillance camera image of Zimmerman that does not seem to show any evidence of him being attacked. But then the quality of the recording is very poor, and so back and forth, round and round it goes, until all the facts get established, then we can make up our mind about this, okay? These things always begin with a pack of unanswered questions. The investigators work to answer them. Zimmerman says Martin was walking behind houses. The physical layout of the scene suggests that from his car, he could not see Martin walking behind houses. However, he could have seen Martin walk to the back of a house, right? Zimmerman says Martin attacked him. Now, we only have his word for it. The funeral says they saw no evidence on Martin's body indicating that a fight had taken place, or at least that he got the worst of anything. We've yet to see any evidence from Zimmerman that he was assaulted as he claimed, but his brother, that is George Zimmerman's brother, says that the medical records will support the allegation that Zimmerman sustained a broken nose in the alleged altercation. But then, when did he get the broken nose? Or did he get it broken and did he break it himself? Or something. Oh, my goodness. We have to wait until the investigation does its work. We did learn that Zimmerman was recently fired from a security job because he was, quote, too aggressive, end quote. So I'm sure that'll be factored into the consideration. We also know he wanted to be a cop. And we know he failed to follow the instruction given to him by the 911 dispatcher. And these things we know for sure. So, he was told, let the professionals handle this. But anyway, as for this being about race, well, that appears to be nonsense. There's nothing in Zimmerman's profile supporting the idea that he was racist. He did a community service where he was teaching Black kids to read. He grew up in a racially mixed family. There seems to be nothing in his profile supporting the idea that he was racist, except that he is a registered Democrat. Now, that might make you pause and think, maybe, but probably not against Blacks. Har har. Anyway, I should say some Blacks. If you're a Judge Thomas or Condoleezza Rice or any other conservative Black, well, that's just not Black enough for these folks, huh? These racist bigots like Spike Lee, Roseanne Barr, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. And, you know, Obama keeps stirring the pot with his sympathetic comments about Trayvon. Now, what you think about this? It's one thing to join all of us in our sadness over the killing of this kid. I mean, even if the kid did go off on Zimmerman and attack him, it's still a tragedy. Something's wrong here in shooting an unarmed kid. I don't know. It just looks like way gross overreaction. He had no weapon or anything like this. Anyway, we're all waiting for the facts to get established, but this is very, very sad. And our heart goes out to the family, big time. But anyway, it's one thing to identify with the nation's grief in a matter like this. But listen, folks, to say, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Excuse me? What is that about? I mean, look, everybody, I'm sure, I know I did, everybody would think of their own kid when something like this comes up. Especially if you happen to have a 17-year-old. You would identify with that parent grieving over the loss of a kid being shot in this tragic way. Now, my boy's over 20 in Afghanistan. We live with constant concern for his safety. So when we hear about anybody's kid getting killed, I guess there's another level at which it touches us. It's something we immediately identify with. It's a constant concern for us. But it just sounded strange to me to hear the president say, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Lately, he's saying Trayvon reminds him of his daughters. He obviously feels a need to identify with Trayvon, not so much his parents, but with Trayvon, the victim, and to do so in a very personal way. Apparently, the president alleged took the killing of Trayvon very personally, and that's giving him a pass on exploiting the event for political gain. Okay, I'm laying that aside for a moment. Let's just say that this thing touched him in a very personal way. And I mean beyond the way we all felt touched by this sad news, as in, ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. But President-elect Obama was obviously very personally touched by this tragedy, which is in itself not so curious, since it touches us all. But it continues to strike me as very curious that he would identify with this so personally. I mean, when you say, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon, the victim in this situation. I guess I couldn't say that. You know what I mean? Could I? Trayvon is black, I'm white. So I could not say, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Could I? You following this? Now, I've looked at the pictures of Trayvon. I don't see any peculiar likeness to Obama. Obama's mulatto, which means he's half European or half white. Trayvon is not half white. I don't think it's because Trayvon looks like he could have been Obama's son. It's because Trayvon is black. And the president-elect identifies with his black ancestry, and as he has himself admitted in his book, Dreams for My Father, he has difficulty or had difficulty dealing with his white side. Now, let me tell you why I think it's interesting and why this made the brain massage. Did you hear about the two white guys that were gunned down by a black teenager in Florida last April 16, 2011? Yeah, this one never went national. Two unarmed British tourists got drunk and wandered into, I guess they call them a hood, a housing project where Sean Tyson lived, a black young man. And ironically, by the way, he's 17 years old. Well, Sean shot both of these unarmed kids dead in cold blood. Now, this didn't get Obama's attention. And this might not seem surprising since it got very little attention outside of Florida. And by the way, no one went crazy about this being a black-on-white hate crime. No one started screaming racism. When you know the details of the story, you will be forced to concede that's exactly what it was. I mean, do you suppose Sean would have shot dead two black kids that wandered into his hood? Well, maybe. Yeah, gang-related stuff, blah, blah, blah. But witnesses of the crime informed us that Tyson told them, quote, I saw two crackers, end quote. Yeah. And in case you don't know, that's black hood lingo for white guys. They call us crackers. I guess it's the equivalent of a lowbrow white guy referring to black people as darkies. Tyson told these witnesses that he attempted to rob the two crackers, but when they explained they had no money and begged Tyson to let them go home, Tyson told his friends that he said, quote, since you ain't got no money, then I have something for your and buttocks, only he used another word, and proceeded to shoot them several times. He killed them in cold blood, and then crawled back into his room through his window, and then bragged about it to his friends. Yeah, but my point is, Obama never noticed this incident. And what makes this particularly interesting is that the parents of one of the boys that was killed actually wrote him a letter asking for his notice. Well, no, actually three letters, and asking for some acknowledgement of their loss. The matter, you see, you have to understand that what happened, the matter hit the UK, United Kingdom, like a firestorm. The entire nation was in grief over this atrocity. Two of Britain's citizens travel to the United States on a holiday, and they get gunned down by a racist murderer. That's news. And it made national news in the UK, but not here. Why? Stay with me, folks. A 17-year-old black racist kills two white kids visiting here from the UK in cold blood in what was clearly a race hate related crime, and it goes national news in the UK, but never gains national attention here. One of the parents of the kids killed is bothered at the lack of national attention given to the murder of their son, a son that, well, frankly, that did not look like it could have been one of Obama's kids. And anyway, this father writes three letters, and not only does Obama not even mention any sympathy or grief for the loss to this family, and offer some sort of statement about the concern we all should have about racial hatred, he does not even bother to reply to their letters. I mean, these people don't even get a form letter response. Now, I've got to ask a few questions here. We have two incidents, both of them occurring in Florida, each involving a 17-year-old black kid. In one, the 17-year-old black kid is shot by a Hispanic neighborhood watch guard in a circumstance that suggests he acted foolishly, rashly, over-aggressively, but every indication is that it was not motivated by racial hatred. This story becomes national news and gets ginned up as a race hate case. President Obama is moved so deeply by this, he speaks about it repeatedly and expresses profound personal identification with the victim, saying, "If I had a son, he would look like Trayvon." Another case, about a year earlier in Florida, involving another 17-year-old black kid. This one named Sean Tyson. Only in this case, the black kid shoots to death two white visitors from the UK. And all the indicators are that it was motivated by racial hatred. It never becomes national news. Obama is asked by the parents to notice the tragedy and to make some statement. He ignores them. He doesn't even bother responding to their letters. He doesn't even offer them a simple modicum of sympathy. I guess the explanation must be, you see, that if he had a son, he wouldn't look like either of the white victims of the black shooter. What is the lesson here? Al Sharpton says nothing about a black kid killing two white guys in what was clearly a race hate crime. Jesse Jackson says nothing. Spike Lee says nothing. Louis Farrakhan says nothing. Obama says nothing. The national news media does not make it a showcase for race conditions in America. But when a Hispanic neighborhood watch guard kills a 17-year-old black kid in circumstances that make it clear it was not a race hate crime, nevertheless, all of these people run to the podiums in front of media cameras to condemn it as a race crime. They rush to judgment before the facts are known, before the shooter has had an opportunity to receive his day in court. What message does this send? What message does it send to the many hundreds of thousands of black young men in this country who are constantly barraged with disinformation and propaganda to believe that the white man is their greatest enemy, that the white man is their oppressor, and that they are out to kill him? It's a stinking lie. What does it say to the white community, the vast majority of whom have no racial issues and can only look at all this and ask, what in the world is this about? Well, I'll tell you what it's about. It's about dividing the country and setting us up for another civil war if they're not careful. Only instead of it being about to free the slaves, this one's going to be about destroying our liberties and making all Americans slaves to the state. Wish I had time to develop that. Maybe I will another show. They're doing it with lies. The lie that the blacks in this country should continue to be angry about slavery and make the white crackers pay. What nonsense! 600,000 white crackers died in the Civil War. Wasn't that enough payment for them? And will they also attack the countries that sold the slaves to the traders? Huh? Yeah, come on. Yeah, I mean the African nations who sold their own people into slavery. After they take vengeance on the millions of white crackers here who had absolutely nothing to do with slavery, will they launch an attack now on the Muslim nations who sold their ancestors into slavery and participated in the slave trade? Of course they won't do that, because that isn't what it's about. This is about certain people agitating the blacks to use them to overthrow our system and replace it with Marxism. Have you ever noticed that all these guys stirring this business up are Marxist-oriented people like Spike Lee and the rest, including Barr, by the way? They're all Marxists. Some of them are dupes and some are deputies to the cause, but they're all working to the same end. If they were really concerned about racial tensions in this nation, they would be equally concerned when it's black on white as they are when it's white on black or Hispanic on black or whatever. Oh, mercy. Give me a call if you have an opinion about this at 1-888-770-8000, 1-888-770-8000. I'll be in town this, will I? Yeah, I will be in town this weekend, so I'll take calls, think about it, I'll be right back.
Pastor that doesn't compromise. You've got to come to church on Easter Sunday. You'll love it.
What I like about Lighthouse Baptist Church is that the Word of God is taught, and I want to invite all my friends to come hear the services on Easter Sunday.
The preaching is hot, and the pastor preaches in season and out of season. Come to Easter services here at Lighthouse Baptist Church.
I love the spirit here. I love how I could come here, and it's a family, and I want to invite you to come to the Easter service at Lighthouse Baptist Church.
I love my church because it's an opportunity for me to serve in the ministry. I love that I can have someone to go to if I need anything, and I greatly encourage you to come for our Easter service.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on
standby. Air.
The Brain Masseur Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Scheibach, Brain Masseur. I'm Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch and singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Hey, I want you to come visit me on Easter Sunday. Of course, you can come earlier or anytime. But I'm preaching a message on Easter that you're going to find very relevant to our times and totally about Easter. We're continuing to follow the case of Robert Bales, of course. And that's the Marine who allegedly went rogue and killed 17 Afghan civilians in a village near Kandahar. And what we have is that at about 3 a.m., Sergeant Bales, geared up with night vision goggles and his weapon, went off base, entered into the village and into three separate village homes and started firing, killing men, women, and children. According to witnesses, relatives of those killed, he then poured chemicals on the dead bodies and burned them. According to this report, it is believed he then returned to base and turned himself into authorities. It's also interesting that all the pictures blur out the faces of the victims. We're not supposed to be able to identify who these victims are, is it? I mean, even the ones that apparently weren't burned. Apparently, he didn't burn them all, which is also, that's interesting. The witnesses from the villages have some pretty significant disparities in their account of the events. One example, a few eyewitnesses claim they saw a group of drunk military men come into the village and commit this massacre. But all other eyewitnesses report seeing only one soldier. Everybody is talking like it's a foregone conclusion that Sergeant Bales committed these atrocities. But as far as I can tell, that has not been established as a fact. However, President Obama is convinced already that military personnel, our military personnel, were involved in this massacre, at least one was, and I don't know, maybe he's right. What I'm saying is that no eyewitnesses have identified Sergeant Bales as the shooter. And so far, we have had no eyewitness come forward from the camp to say they saw Sergeant Bales leave the camp at around 3 a.m. or so in battle-ready gear, or saw him return looking like he had just got back from a massacre. I mean, flushed, breathing heavy, a wild look in his eye, a little tense, nervous, thirsty, this kind of thing. The sorts of things you'll notice if a guy's just been in that kind of action. We have none of that. He has not confessed to doing anything, and he seems confused about the whole mess. He can't account for the time period in which the massacre occurred, apparently. He claims to have a lapse of memory. This is fishy. He remembers the events before and after, but the period during which the massacre occurred are blocked out of his memory. That's interesting. He turned himself in. Why? You know, unless the guy set this up on purpose in advance and he's using this whole thing as a ruse to wiggle out of serious jail time or even the death penalty for what he did, but what would be the purpose and point of all that? It just doesn't make any sense, especially if witnesses or other evidence does show, first, that he's the shooter, and second, that he actually returned to the base and then went back again to the village. I mean, that just pretty well narrows it down to some kind of a premeditated act, but then the question becomes why? Why would a soldier pull something like this? I mean, listen, the evidence hasn't come up yet, but look, these guys are allocated their munitions. And if he's short in his allocation, well, that's going to say something, isn't it? You see? Or if witnesses do come forward, it's not real easy to get on and off base without being noticed, hello? See? Stuff like that. There's just a lot going on here that... Now, somewhat facetiously, in a show or two back when this first broke, but seriously, making a point, I approached this from the angle of what Islam has taught us, how I would spin this whole business if I was approaching it like they do. You know, maybe the soldier has had it with the death to America and these Afghan soldiers killing our boys over a burned Quran. And then the president alleged saying nothing while bowing and scraping to them and with apologies for burning Qurans. And Islam has taught us that what you do in such cases is you go all jihad and start killing the first Afghani that comes into sight, right? That's what they do. Of course, this does not justify the behavior. And yes, we are not like that. That doesn't represent the values of the American way. But it is what Islam does over there. And the hubris of that crowd pretending that this is such an egregious massacre is insulting in the context of what they do to us. You understand the point I'm making here? You gotta be careful. Don't misunderstand me. In other words, when the shoe's on the other foot, that is on theirs, they excuse it and turn it around and blame us. But notice the similarity in spirit of the Afghani response with the president's sympathy for that response and the response to the killing of Trayvon Martin. Follow this. The Afghani witness who said, quote, "This is an anti-human and an anti-Islamic act," end quote. See, it's a foregone conclusion. Anti-Islamic. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's all about their religion. Now get this. Quote, "No one," he said, the same guy says, quote, "No one is allowed in any religion in the world to kill women and children," end quote. Excuse me? This from a fellow who endorses the arbitrary firing of missiles into Israeli neighborhoods, killing and terrorizing women and children? This from a fellow whose religion encourages mothers and fathers to sell their sons and daughters to be used as suicide bombers? I mean, do you see what I mean? It is enough to make anybody go stark raving mad. How can they be so blind to this? They can't even see it when it's put right smack dab in front of their faces and under their noses, as in this case it would be. If indeed any soldiers went into the village and shot up the place, and some Afghani did not dress in American military garb and stage the whole thing, yeah, that's one possible scenario. Yeah, I can imagine Sergeant Bales being drugged somehow, this massacre getting staged, him being set up. But at present, I doubt that scenario. I just don't know what to think of this yet. There's way too many questions out there. But notice, these guys go right to anti-Islamic attack, don't they? Before anything is proved or set up, it's all anti-Islamic attack, all about their religion. It's immediately interpreted as an attack on Islam. Before anything is known, before we have any evidence of what really happened, it's an attack on Islam. The blacks in this country do the same thing. It's always an attack on their race. When a black person is the victim of some crime right away, it's race hate. I mean, they go straight to racial hatred. Of course, that's only when a black person is the victim. If a black person is the perpetrator, well, then it's the fault of white oppression. You see, it's the same mentality. It's all about blank angst against white racism. I mean, there's no reasoning with this kind of mentality. God help us, we're in serious trouble here. I wonder if there's some relationship between this and the fact that so many blacks are recruited into the Muslim religion. I mean, it's just a thought. But think about it. Many of our black young people are drawn into the Islam faith. The whole new Black Panther crowd is made up mostly of black Muslim youth. My friends, I think the greatest evil in our country is how minorities have been manipulated and deceived into believing whatever problems they have are the fault of the white man. And we've been sitting back and letting this go on. We'd better start addressing this. And I mean aggressively. You know, like the Islamic whack jobs in Afghanistan and all the stands, including Iran. You know what I mean? Like them, many in the black community here interpret everything that happens within the context of their belief that it's all about them. It's all about their race. See? It's all about the religion for the Islamic jihad crazies. It's all about race for the black people here. There's so many of them. And actual evidence or proof, none of that matters. A black kid gets killed and it's racial hatred, period. A black kid kills two white guys. And what, it's because the white man has oppressed the black kid? You see, it's the same kind of mentality, I'm telling you. You, Mr. President-elect, Mr. Al Sharpton, Mr. Jesse Jackson, Mr. Spike Lee, you are responsible for that anger. You have been playing this race card for so many years. Your political power and your status and so on is entirely built on playing that race card. You have worked it up to a point where it's becoming more and more obvious you want to instigate race warfare. You're going to push this to the point you will actually produce the scenario you have created in your wicked imagination. You are instigating virtual war. Do you think we're not listening to some of you people out there calling for killing white babies? The white crackers? You think we're not hearing this? Do you think we're going to hear that and just sit back and wait for you to stir up some race problem that'll trigger this anger to move out into the street and these pitiful, young, confused, deceived black kids go on a rampage looking for cracker babies to kill? Are you out of your mind? Now you'd better tone down the rhetoric, Mr. Al Sharpton, Mr. Jesse Jackson, Mr. Spike Lee, Mr. Obama. You'd better make it clear that racial hatred is wrong. It's wrong no matter what color it is. But I'm telling you, the message I'm getting from you folks, Mr. Sharpton, Mr. Jackson, Mr. Lee, Mr. Obama, is that unless the young man were your child, he would look like you. You don't care. You don't care if a 17-year-old black kid kills two white guys because they were crackers who dared to walk into his hood. But you go all jihad on us if a Hispanic neighborhood watch guard kills a 17-year-old black kid in circumstances that clearly have nothing to do with race, but circumstances that are nevertheless abhorrent, it appears. Now, I'm hearing you. I'm listening. And I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you to wake up. To wake up and see what you're doing to the young people of this country. And not just blacks, whites too. You are turning our young people into hate-filled, angry kids who think they have a right to kill white people. Is that what you really want? Now, do I need to say, of course not all black people are deceived in this nonsense? I know that. Many black people are as sick of this as I am. And they are as concerned about it as I am. But the MSM doesn't listen to them. No. The MSM, joins the Obama Brigade in marginalizing these black people, even excommunicating them from the community. Yeah, they don't join them in fomenting this irrational hatred for white men. Anyway, I need to conclude here. I'm concerned about this. I hope you are. And I hope you've enjoyed the show today, or at least, I hope that I've stimulated some thought on a few topics that we were able to get to. And I had a list of about five others I didn't even get to touch. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. Lights on or lights off, give me a call or send me an email. Call me at 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Podcasters, email me from wherever you are in the world. Over 13,000 some odd of you. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
I love Lighthouse Baptist Church. This is where you can get the meat of the Word of God. I'd like to invite everybody that's listening to come for Easter Sunday.
I like Lighthouse Baptist Church because you're big on giving God the glory. And also, my kids, they love coming because their class is really, really good. So, yeah, you can come for Easter.
I love my church because it's an opportunity for me to serve in the ministry. I love that I can have someone to go to if I need anything.
I'm thankful for the friends, the good friends that I have at Lighthouse Baptist Church, and I encourage you to come and meet them at our Easter service.
Well, the truth is taught here, and there's a true spirit of God here.
It's the first church that I've ever felt loved and welcome.
I love Lighthouse Baptist Church because the Word of God is preached and taught faithfully without adding anything to it or omitting anything from it.
I love this church because it's a place where you can come and grow and be taught the Word of God and be fed, and a place where you're going to be loved.